Erev Tov, everybody. A pleasure to welcome everybody and a pleasure to welcome back Rabbi Benji Samuels. It's, who is the rabbi of Congregation Shari Tzvila in Newton Center since 1995. He teaches widely in the Boston Jewish community. You'll hear he's a wonderful teacher as a graduate of Yeshiva University with a PhD in science and philosophy and religion from Boston University, an MA in Bible studies in medieval Jewish history, and a BA in English literature. So it's a pleasure to welcome back Rabbi Samuels. I have here, but I had last year, I believe. This is the book he gave me when we
please
met.
Please mute
Boston.
Everyone. Please
hold on.
Mute
yeah,
everyone.
Yeah. I'll mute everybody in a moment. So just it's hard to mute people and talk at the same time. But if everybody can mute themselves, that would be good. Yeah, there we go. There we go. Hold on a second. Yeah, so when we met in Boston, when Rabbi Schechter was running the Salvation Institute, so I think this is when you gave me the book of the Divrei Torah from members of his shul, and it's really a pleasure to welcome back Rabbi Samuels to teach us this evening on Parshat Yitro. Bakasha.
Thank you, Rabbi Kelman. It is a great honor to be teaching tonight for Torah in Motion. Rabbi Kelman is a long, dear friend of mine, and I have so much respect for, as I just mentioned, the scope and the reach of Torah in Motion. It's really a gift to the Jewish people, Rav J, that you've created. Yasher Koach to all of you for showing up on this Thursday night. I see amidst all of the names, old friends and current friends and new friends. So it's great to have all of you in this shared space of Torah learning. Rav J had just mentioned the very sad news of the passing of Rabbi Simcha Kraus, Zecher Tzadik Livracha Be'olav HaShalom. Rabbi Kraus is a teacher, a mentor, a friend, and I'd like to dedicate our learning to his beloved memory. May his neshama have an aliyah, and may his family and all of Klal Yisrael have nechama. Tonight, we're going to talk about Yitro, a confidant and counselor to none other than Moshe Rabbeinu. And I'd like to go in search of the character and personality of Yitro. And as we know from our study of Torah, the Torah is not thick in description. It doesn't tell us what a person's hair color is, their stature, any physical aspects to their personage. Unless it's a major plot line. So we know Shimshon, of course, has long hair because it's part and parcel of the plot line. But was Moshe Rabbeinu tall or short? Was he bald or did he have curly hair? Right? Did he look like Charlton Heston in the Ten Commandments or Ben Kingsley in TNT's rendition of the Exodus story? We don't know. But what we do know is that the personality and character of the biblical characters, and here is in their words and in their actions. And so we're going to study text, and we're going to try to create a profile of Yitro and understand this remarkable personality who had a major influence on the development of the children of Israel and their burgeoning society that was in Kohed and started to come together in the desert and ultimately began a process and a journey that continues into this day of creating the good society and certainly the Jewish society. So I am going to share the screen. I need Rabbi Jake to make me a co-host so I can share the screen.
Sorry about that. We were talking too much. For friendly, I forgot. So now you're co-host. Sorry.
Okay, and I just need a moment to re-scramble. Baruch Hashem, we have a lot of people on this call, so I am blessed. I have an abundance of screens. I have three screens in front of me, but I have all of your beautiful faces on one screen to my left. If you see me looking to my left, I'm looking at your faces. I'm not watching Netflix. There's no one else in the room here. I'm looking at you. And then I have my notes in my center screen so I could look at the camera. And then I have the text that I'm sharing to the right. So if you see me looking around, I'm just managing all of these materials. So I want to begin by reading the first time we meet Yitro, which is during Moshe's initial escape from Paro to Midian. And the Torah reveals precious little about Yitro's character and his relationship with Moshe, but the rabbis in the Midrash and in the Agadah and the Talmud fill in some of those details, and our hopefully trenchant questions and speculations will at least give possibilities of how we could build the personality and understand the importance of this remarkable personage. So we're going to begin. I'm going to read in English. We will refer to Hebrew when it's pertinent to a close reading, but I just want to get us all on the same page and really have continuity with the ideas for the purpose of this class. Now, the priest of Midian had seven daughters. They came to draw water and filled the troughs to water their father's flock, but shepherds came and drove them off. Moses rose to their defense and he watered their flock. When they turned to their father Reuel, he said to them, "How is it that you've come back so soon today?" They answered, "An Egyptian rescued us from the shepherds. He even drew water for us and watered the flock." And he said to his daughters, "Where is he then? Why did you not leave the man? Ask him home to break bread." Moses consented to stay with the man, and he gave Moses his daughter Zipporah as a wife. She bore a son, whom he named Gershom, for he said, "Ger hayiti be'eretz nochriya, I have been a stranger in a foreign land." Okay, what do we know about Yitro? Let's just gather our facts. What impression does the Torah convey about him? So let's gather our facts. He has how many children? Seven. And they're all daughters. Any sons? Presumably not. The daughters are serving as his shepherds. Now, this is important because when Moshe marries Zipporah, Moshe becomes not only his son-in-law, but his first son. And in the context of a patriarchal society, the first son is the person to whom you transmit your family traditions, your wisdom, and potentially who is the inheritor of your wealth. So the fact that he has only daughters, no sons, and Moshe is the first son-in-law is a very interesting fact that we have to register on our list. The second thing we're told is that he is Kohen Midian, or actually it's the first thing we're told. He is the priest of Midian. Now, what status would Kohen Midian carry in the Midianite community, especially during biblical times? And attendant to that, was he actually respected in the community as we would expect? Now, the Mechilta tells us that he was both a Komer, and another opinion says he was a Sar. The Kohen of Midian, I have the English here in source number one, he was a priest, Komer Haya, Rabbi Elazar Hamodai Amar, Sar Haya. He was a prince, he was an officer, he was aristocracy. So Kohen Midian would indeed endow him with great status. We would expect him to be highly respected. But what's the problem, my dear friends? Does the text seemingly indicate that his station is highly respected? If so, as you're all thinking, why would his daughters be abused by the shepherds, prevented from watering their flocks? Why wouldn't they allow the daughters of the chief priest to water their flocks first? And do we have a sense that this was a one-off occurrence or it was something that happened all of the time, right? How do we know it was all of the time? Because when they came home, he said, "Why are you home so early today?" Right? He didn't expect them home. It sounds like there's more to the story than meets the eye, right? It happens often. Now, he invites Moshe in to break bread, right? He actually chastises his daughters. Why did you leave him at the well? Now, there could be two possible at least two possible interpretations of his motivation. Anyone want to suggest what one may be? He's a Balchesed. Chaim, what are you thinking?
He's Baal Chesed, and he wants to meet him.
Great, he's a Baal Chesed, and he wants to meet this man who saved his daughters.
And as maybe a possible husband.
The other thing is he's an opportunist. Not in a bad way, but for God's sake, he has seven daughters. Right? Bring him home for a job interview. I need a son-in-law.
The fact that they said he is Mitzri, he is Egyptian, it triggered another curiosity because they were not in good terms between the Egyptian and the Midianite in that period.
Great. Why is an Egyptian finding himself at our doorstep? And what's the story there? There could have been a curiosity in addition to an expression of chesed or in addition to the search for a son-in-law. And also, frankly, if there's more to the story of why a man of his prestige and station has daughters who are being mistreated by the population, right? If he's on the outs with the larger community for reasons we have yet to discover, then having an ally who might, you know, bring something to the table would also be appealing to him. Now, Moshe agrees to stay, and we have to ask ourselves, why did Moshe agree to stay? So one of the reasons he could agree to stay is because the man had seven daughters. He fell in love with Zipporah. What hint might the Torah be telling us that says there might be romance brewing? There's nothing in the text that says so explicitly. But this scene is reminiscent of a different scene.
It's by the Baal
scene. Yaakov.
Yes, Yaakov and Rachel and Leah. It's a well scene. So we wouldn't be surprised that this is the outcome. And it also could be that Moshe was sick of running, right? He was on the run. Remember, why did Moshe run away? Because Pharaoh had heard that he killed a taskmaster. And Moshe feared for his life, even though he was a prince of Egypt. He feared for his life. And so he might have been sick of running. But the question is, right, do we really know anything about how Moshe spent his time there and what his relationship with Yitro was? Do we know anything about that? Well, we know some of it, right? What does Moshe do over the years when he's with Yitro? He becomes his shepherd. That's right, Chaim. He becomes his shepherd. That's a total reformation of Moshe's character from an Ish Mitzri, from a prince of Egypt, to a Ro'et Tzon. He would never have been a Ro'et Tzon in the royal palace household in Egypt. But I want us to turn now to chapter 3, Perek Gimel, Pasuk Aleph, right? We know that Moshe is shepherding, and he's tending the flock of his father-in-law, Yitro. Here he's called Yitro. Right before, he was called Reuel, the Kohen Midian, and he drives the flock into the wilderness, and he comes to a place called Horeb, which is described as the mountain of God, and we know that he has an epiphany at the Sneha Boer, the burning bush, and God tells him that he has a mission. Moshe says, I'm not worthy. He says, I'm not giving you a choice. You have to go, and you are worthy, and you're going to do a good job. And at the end of that revelatory experience, the Torah says, Vayelech Moshe vayeshev el yeter chotno. Moshe goes back, and he goes back to his father-in-law, and he says to him, Elchana v'ashuva el achai asher b'mitzrayim. I'm going to return to my brethren in Egypt. Ve'ere ha'odim chayim. And I'm going to see whether they're still alive, how they're faring. Vayomer Yitro l'Moshe lech l'shalom. And Moshe, Yitro said to Moshe, go to peace. Now, what did Moshe tell him? Is that all Moshe tell him? If we're going to be a biblical minimalist, we can indeed say that Moshe revealed nothing about the revelation that Moshe had at the Sne'a Boer, at the burning bush.
No way.
But did Yitro know of Moshe's mission, his message, his destined greatness? Did Moshe discuss strategy or his fears and concerns with his father-in-law? The Torah is silent. All we know is that Yitro gave his blessing. I want us to hold that question because Chazal, I believe, have a very subtle but important read on this that we're going to come back to. But I want to take a step back and try to clarify the scene and entertain these observations and questions a tiny bit more. So first of all, who was Yitro? How old was he? His occupation is Kohen Midyan. What does that mean? What is his tribal status, his national status, his international status? Was he a good guy or a bad guy? What's his own personal history? And how does Moshe fit into all of this? So let's start with his age. And I admit, this is total speculation. But we know one thing. He's the father of seven daughters. And at least one of them is of marriageable age. So can we agree he's at least in his 20s?
He is between 40s and 50s.
Okay, so I like you, Chaim, right? I think he's older, but I'm prejudiced by the role that I envision him playing in our people's history and his status, which in patriarchal society is often achieved with age. Even in our society, it's achieved with age. But, you know, so he might be in his 30s and 40s and 50s, but theoretically, he could be quite young, which would, you know, give us a very different image here. But that's all speculation. We don't know, right? But we know he has status, right? He's either a priest or a sar or both. He's a priest or an officer, a prince or a tribal leader, an elder or both. So at the tribal level, we know he's a patriarch of a household, right? We know he's Kohen Midyan at a national level. But Chazal imagine that he had an international role. Some of you may have heard once upon a time the Midrash, and I'm highlighting it in source 3, Shlosha Hayu Ba'ota Etza. There were three people who were counselors to Pharaoh. Bilam, Eov, and Yitro. Pharaoh said, how should we address the Jewish problem? Bilam said, kill the baby boys. And for that, Bilam ultimately was killed. Eov, right? Eov didn't say anything. And for that, he had his ordeal. Yitro fled. And because he fled, the Gemara says that he merited to have his descendants sit in judgment in the Lishkat HaGazit, in the Sanhedrin, in the Beit HaMikdash. So, right, Chazal imagined that he had an international reputation, that he was a consultant and a counselor. Now, did he gain that position because he was an evil guy and ultimately he did tshuva from that? Or was he never evil? So really there seems to be different voices in Chazal. They imagine him as a Baal tshuva or they imagine him as a good guy from the start. Let me give you an example. Famously, we all remember, or if you don't, it's my great privilege to share with you this Midrash for the first time. Right. So the Midrash in Shmot Rabbah that the astrologers had warned Pharaoh that someone is out to take his crown. And we fear that the one who takes your crown and places it on his own head is the one who's destined to take away your kingdom. So there's a little child in Pharaoh's house that is crawling and crawls over to the crown and wants to put it on his head. So some advised executing Moshe, little Moshela, by the sword. others by fire. But Yitro, who was among them, said, the child has no understanding. Test him. Set him before coals and gold. And if he reaches for the gold, then you have a problem. But if he reaches for the coal, right, he has no knowledge. He can't differentiate between a glowing ember and a shiny piece of gold. So we know that Moshe starts reaching for the gold. But the Malach Gabriel intervenes and pushes his hand and he lifts up the coal and puts it at his mouth and impairs his speech. Right. But Yitro shows himself right in this Chazal in their recollection and their imagining of this Midrash envision Yitro as a good guy here protecting Moshe, whether he knew that Moshe would be the Redeemer who would usurp Pharaoh's power, or whether he was just, it would say it's cruel to kill a child. Yitro's a good guy. So, you know, is he a guy who did tshuva or is he a good guy, right? What does it mean to run away rather than to confront? That's a hard challenge too. Who says he would have been able to do anything? But let's go back to Komer Haya. He was a priest. What does this tell us about his personality? Right? What was he, a faker, or was he a spiritual seeker? Right? And there seems to be indication, at least in Chazal, again, these are Midrashim, where Chazal themselves are on the same quest that we're on, right? In search of character, trying to understand a profile for Yitro, that Chazal imagined that he was a spiritual seeker. Let me show you. The Michilta says that there was not a deity in the world that Yitro had not worshipped. Now, was that because he was like really invested in Avodah Zarah and like he just bought into like the many, 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 many God theology? Or is he trying out different religions and theologies and practices because he's a truth seeker? He's a spiritual seeker, right? It can be a negative appraisal, but it also could be a positive appraisal. Now, do we have anyone in our tradition who Chazal tell us, despite the Torah's silence on his early years, that Chazal tell us was likewise a spiritual seeker?
Sure, we have. Rabbi Akiva, Resh Lakish.
Absolutely. Chazal are filled with them, Chaim. What about in the Torah itself?
Abraham Avinu.
Is there any parallel with Abraham Avinu? Maybe the reason that Yitro is not respected anymore by the people of his nation, the Midianites, and maybe the reason the shepherds harass his daughters is because he's an iconoclast in his society, like Abraham, the Midrash says, was an iconoclast in his society. And that would explain why, despite his status, he gets no respect. Now, there is a pasuk in the Torah that allows us license to compare Yitro to Abraham Avinu. And that is in, let me see if where I have it. Nope, it's not there. Here it
is. Both of them were shepherds.
And they were both shepherds. Although that was probably the number one profession of young men in 1800 BCE or Yitro would have been, you know, the 14th century BCE or the 13th century BCE. Here, look at this. In Parsha Ba'alot Chan, Sefer Bamidbar, in Perek Yud, Moshe says to Chovev ben Ru'uel Hamidyani Choten Moshe, to his father-in-law. We'll get to the names in a second. He says, come with us. And Yitro says, Vayomer Elav Lo Elech, I'm not going to go with you. And what does he say? Ki im el artsi ve el moladati elech. Does that Hebrew expression, No, I'm going to return to my native land, to my birthplace. Does that resonate for anyone? Right? So the Torah itself, in its infinite wisdom and illusion, right, uses the same Abraham language, perhaps to give us a clue that Yitro has parallel to Abraham. He too was a spiritual seeker that was raised in Avodah Zarah, but came to the true faith in God. And Chazal interpret the reason he said Lo Elech was not because he didn't want to share in the destiny of Israel. Why did he want to go back? Because he wanted to share the wealth, proselytize. He wanted to turn a polytheistic, pagan, idolatrous world into a world of monotheism and its ethics. And how do we know that he cares about ethics and justice? We'll get there before the shir is done. But you know the parsha, right? He's very focused on the judiciary, on justice, on ethics. He wants to, right? So he is an Abraham-type personality. Now, not everyone agrees with the righteous Yitro development that I'm presenting, but I believe that there's great grounding in the biblical text, certainly in Chazal, or at least amongst many voices in Chazal, to develop this righteous Yitro trajectory. But even if he is righteous when Moshe meets him, was he always righteous? Now, we get the impression that Yitro was always good, or he was a Baal Tshuva. He grew. He was a spiritual seeker. Now, let me ask you a question. Is there any further indication in the Torah itself that Yitro was not a simple personality without complexity or sophistication, but actually was a person who developed and matured through his life, who was a truth seeker and belongs in the all-star list of these great spiritual leaders?
If it would not be, it would not propose Moshe a different way.
Wonderful. So first of all, he wouldn't have the zchut to have the relationship with Moshe and play the role that he's going to play later in our parsha of advising Moshe regarding the judiciary. But I even want to go basic. What about, we've already alluded to it.
Say that he has many different names?
Thank you, Debbie. He has so many different names, right? Does anyone know how many names Yitro has? So Chazal count them up. And they say he has seven names. The Mechilta says he has seven names. And you know, we have this idea, Kishmo Kenhu, that our names reflect something about our essence, about our personality. There are names that we get at birth, and there are names that we are called by our friends, and there are names that we earn for ourselves. And he has seven names. He's called Yeter. And Yitro, he's called Choveb, he's called Reuel, he's called Chever, he's called Petuel, he's called Keni. So what do names tell us, and what do an abundance of names tell us? Right?
Different characters.
He had different characters, and he grew from one to the next, or he meant different things to different people. He went through various transformative stages of development. And even Yeter to Yitro, right, like Abraham and Sarah or Yehoshua, he gets a letter, a theophoric representation, a representation of God added to his name, which both indicates his greatness as a spiritual seeker and his greatness as a Baal Chesed. First, he's called Reuel, which means friend of God. That itself says a lot. Now, some Mephorshim, the Pshat Mephorshim, they try to explain away at least some of the redundancy of names, especially within the same paragraphs. Reuel was not Yitro. He was the grandfather of Tzipporah. But Ramban embraces, I only have it in the Hebrew in source number 13. I didn't bring the translation here. But Ramban does a rigorous analysis Nachmanides of each of Yitro's names and shows how they actually create a narrative of development. Which name was before his conversion to monotheism, and which was after his conversion to monotheism? Ramban has a whole narrative that he creates based on the names and where the names appear in the different texts of the Torah. Right? So Yitro is a complex person. And he has varied and complex relationships, and he goes through transformative development. Now, how does Moshe fit into all of this? Now, we could say that Yitro met Moshe when he was a little baby, like we saw in the Midrash. But according to the Pshat, at least, it seems Moshe first meets Yitro, right, when he arrives in Midian, when he escapes from Paro. And here I want to come to really a pivotal question, and that is, how long was Moshe in Midian? And here there is a remarkable midrash that appears in, at least in the Tanhum, I believe it appears in several places. Vaya Moshe bepaltrin shel paro esrim shana. Moshe was in the royal palace for 20 years. At age 20, vayelech Moshe, and Moshe went, vayhi bayamim harabim ahem, right after much time, Moshe went out, and he saw a Elachab to his brother-in-law, his brethren, his kinsmen, Vayar ish mitri makeh ish mitri me'echab, right? So he was 20 years old when he went on that walkabout, and he had this crisis of conscience, and he kills the taskmaster, and then when he understands that Pharaoh discovered it, he runs away to Midian. Yeshomrim arba'im shana, that he was actually 40 years old, not a teenager when, or a young adult when he left Paro's palace. Ba'arba'im shana b'midbar, and he was 40 years in Midian, and then he came back to Paro, let my people go, and then he's 40 years in the desert, right? His life is in thirds. V'yeshomrim esrim b'beit Paro, shishim b'midian, ba'arba'im b'midbar, and some people say that he was 20 in the house of Pharaoh, 60 in Midian, and 40 in the Midbar. Now, granted that Moshe's formative years are in Beit Paro, but let me ask you a question. Do we still continue to develop, you know, in post-adolescence, in young adulthood, during the Odyssey years, in adulthood, in middle life, in post-middle life, right? Can we say that if Moshe spent 40 or 60 years in Midian, that Moshe himself grew and matured and developed as a personality? And if he did, he did that in the orbit and in the relationship with Yitro.
Now, no question about that.
Thank you. I agree. So
even
now,
your rabbi or I, you still have the capacity to learn and to improve.
Ah, thank you, Chaim. You made my day, because I felt stuck, and now I have aspirations again. I appreciate it. You know, I just started teaching in my own shul, Mesilat Yesharim, and I chose it because I need it. I feel like, you know, in this COVID pandemic, I need to keep growing. So I'm returning to a text that helped form me in my youth. Hopefully
it'll help
form me in middle age. Okay. So Moshe, now it is interesting. I do want to represent in source number 14, Nachmanides has a reading and an interpretation that isn't helpful to my trajectory here. I want to be honest about that. Ramban, I think, influenced by some Chazal that have Moshe's path from Egypt to Midian as a longer path that takes him on different adventures. Ramban wants to suggest that Moshe actually was like 60 years a fugitive on the run. Only towards the end of those years does he arrive in Midian, get married, and that's why he only has one child at that point, that he spends very little time in Midian, right? But whether he's there for only a couple of years, in his 70s, or whether he's there in for 60 years, which is the trajectory of the Midrash that I would like to suggest, right? Chances are Yitro had a dramatic influence on the development of Moshe. And Moshe had a dramatic influence on the development of Yitro. That at the very least, Moshe, Yitro is Moshe's elder, father-in-law, counselor and confidant, but it could be that it was a reciprocal relationship. And unless you say that Moshe stagnated spiritually, emotionally, intellectually for a third or more of his life, Yitro was part of the picture. And the question is, in what way? As confidant, as counselor, the Torah doesn't tell us, right? It's one of the gaps of information that the Torah Shebaal Peh comes to fill in, and that our own reading and speculation is a legitimate way to read the text as I'm trying to model. But we have one piece of the puzzle left in part one of our story, and that is, why does the Torah tell us that after the theophany at the Sneha Boer, the burning bush, that Moshe goes to Yitro and asks permission to leave, and Yitro just says, Lech l'shalom. Did Moshe tell Yitro of his mission, of his message to Paro? Did Moshe discuss strategy, his fears and concerns with his father-in-law? And here I want to direct your attention to a beautiful Gemara. This is now in the Daf Yomi cycle. So Rav J, you'll take a note. You'll put it in your daily Daf Yomi report, right? Rabbi Levi bar Chita says, Haniftar min hamet, when someone takes their leave from someone who just passed away, like our dear teacher and friend, Rabbi Simcha Krauss, to whom we dedicate in his memory this year, Zichrono Livracha, we don't say Lech Lishalom, go to peace. Ela Lech Bishalom, go in peace. But Haniftar min hachai, but when we take leave of someone who's alive, we say Lech Lishalom, go to peace. And we learn this from Yitro. Now, what's the difference between Lech Bishalom, go in peace, and Lech Lishalom, go to peace? Lech Bishalom, go in peace, means your job on the earth is done. Rest in peace. But when you give someone the bracha, Lech Lishalom, you're saying you have a mission. You were put on this earth for a particular purpose, and you have to go build the completeness to our world, the wholeness to our world, the peace of our world, Lech Lishalom. So Chazal, I would like to suggest, this is very subtle, but in their understanding of Yitro saying to Moshe, Lech Lishalom, Yitro is blessing Moshe and his purpose, his mission, his destiny. And perhaps that is a clue that says that Moshe did indeed discuss the revelation. Perhaps they discussed strategy. Perhaps Yitro fortified the imposter syndrome that we know Moshe sometimes felt, that he wasn't worthy. Okay, now we go to part two. We come to our parsha. Here we are, and we're at Har Sinai. It's before the Torah is given, but it's after Kriyat Yamsuf. After they came through the sea, they're encamped in Midbar Sinai at the foot of the mountain. And all of a sudden, Yitro shows up. Yitro, priest of Midian, Moshe's father-in-law, heard all God had done for Moshe, for Israel, for his people, how the Lord brought Israel out of Egypt. So Yitro, Moshe's father-in-law, took Zipporah, Moshe's wife, after she had been sent home. That's a clue that we didn't have in the text. The last time we saw Zipporah, she and Moshe and their children were traveling in the desert back to Mitzrayim. And in fact, they were about to get killed. And Zipporah, a snake swallows Moshe halfway, and Zipporah has to do Brit Milah, and the two uncircumcised sons that scares away the snake and saves Moshe. It's a very strange passage that says, Darshuni, you have to expound me. But they were on the way to Egypt. So why all of a sudden are they being brought back? It seems like the Torah tells us that Moshe felt it was too dangerous for them. Moshe sent them home, or maybe they were a distraction and he wouldn't be able to fulfill his mission. We don't really know. What we do know is that his wife and their sons missed out on Yitziat Mitzrayim. And if we want to ask how come Moshe's sons never rise in leadership to succeed their father or have any place in the hierarchy of Israel, they weren't there. They didn't share the formative experience of Klal Yisrael, of Bnei Yisrael, in the Exodus. And here they're coming back. So Yitro, Moshe's father-in-law, takes his wife after she had been sent home, her two sons, of whom one was named Gershon and the other is Eliezer. And he delivered, and Moshe's father-in-law brought Moshe's sons and wife to him in the wilderness where he was encamped at the mountain of God. And he sent word to Moshe, I, your father-in-law Yitro, am coming to you with your wife and your two sons. And Moshe goes out to meet his father-in-law, bows low, kisses him. They ask after each other's welfare, and they go into the tent. Moshe, the Torah tells us, then recounted to his father-in-law everything that the Lord had done to Pharaoh and to the Egyptians for Israel's sake, all the hardships. And we have to ask what is meant by that had befallen them on the way and how the Lord had delivered them. And Yitro rejoiced over the kindness that the Lord had shown Israel when he delivered them from the Egyptians. He said, blessed be the Lord who delivered you from the Egyptians and from Pharaoh and who delivered the people from under the hand of Egypt. Now I know that the Lord is greater than all gods. Yes, by the very result of the schemes against the people. And Yitro, Moshe's father-in-law, made a kiddush. He brought a burnt offering and sacrifices for God, and Aaron and the elders came to partake of the meal before God with Moshe's father-in-law. He made kiddush. They celebrated. Now, this is an extraordinary reunion, right? What can we learn about Yitro himself, and what can we learn about his relationship with Moshe? Yitro seeks out Moshe and brings him his family. What about the greeting they have for each other in full view of all of Israel? Bowed low, kissed him. They each asked after each other's welfare. What would the perception of Bnei Israel have been to this? Was it a formal greeting? Was it an intimate greeting? Yitro is an important person and deserves kavod. Or is this a loving mutual relationship? And what happens next? Moshe invites Yitro into his tent for intimate conversation. What do they talk about? Everything. Yitzhak Mitzrayim, Pharaoh's intransigence, the miracles, all the hardships that befell him on the way. What does that refer to? Presumably, it includes the people's grumblings, their fears, their challenges to Moshe's leadership. And what happens next? Yitro affirms God, his belief in God. He brings korbanot. They share a sacrificial meal with Ziknei Yisrael and with Aaron. Right? All of the administrative hierarchy, the government of Israel is there. So we do have a sense that Yitro indeed is a counselor and confidant and intimate of Moshe, that their relationship is at worst, you know, one way that Moshe looks at him as a real father figure, which he may not have had in his life because of the complexity of his upbringing, and at best, a real reciprocal relationship where the truth seeker meets the truth seeker, where the leader meets the leader, both the symmetries and asymmetries of their relationship. And what happens next? The organization of the judiciary. So here's the million-dollar question, right? Moshe's sitting. He's not standing, right? We could ask, where does Moshe stand? He doesn't. He's sitting. There's a line way around the block, and people are bringing their petty disputes to Moshe. Yitro, who's obviously trusted and respected by Moshe and Bnei Israel, in light of the fact that he feels he could critique Moshe's leadership and suggest a different manner of organizing the judiciary, right? Why is it necessary that Yitro, a believer, but still a non-Israelite, what we would say in our language, a non-Jew, an outsider to the Exodus experience, why is it important and necessary that he be crucial to the establishment of a central institution of the national government of the children of Israel? Why didn't God himself inform Moshe how to set up the court system? Why couldn't Moshe think of it for himself? Those are weighty questions. Anyone have any ideas?
Rabbi Samuels, it's Lynn.
Dr. Heller. Wonderful to see you.
Yeah, I'm paying a house call. I think what's fascinating is that the only other time you have the phrase lo tov is when God is about to create Eve. He says to Adam, lo tov hayod adam levado. And so here, this the sense also that something is not right with creation. Something is not right with the way society is set up. And maybe I'm sorry.
Go ahead, please finish.
Maybe it takes an outsider to see that and to see the configuration and saying creation is not right. Creation of a nation, it's not good for the leader to be alone.
Wonderful.
Creating a nation.
Wonderful. People don't know you, Lynn. Lynn's a member of our shul. She's my teacher. She's my friend. She has the most beautiful and insightful readings. She holds a doctorate in comparative literature. And Lynn, again, as you do in every time we have opportunity to learn with each other and from each other, you share something really beautiful. The allusion in the language to something is not right in creation, that we all have blinders, even the great Moshe, that we need chavruta in order to chip away at the truth is just an exquisite idea and
model. Rabbi,
please, my friend Chaim, go ahead.
When you're in the forest, can you tell how high is the highest tree? No. You have to go out. The same thing here. Moshe was so much involved with creating a system that he could not see everything. We needed somebody from outside to help him.
Absolutely. Any other ideas?
Yitro is called later on V'hayita lanu le'enayim. That he is the one who helps them see, be it where to go in the desert, or he always has a perspective and a vision. In the Midrash that you had quoted earlier, he seems to have served that sort of function also for Paro, that he was an advisor there.
Wonderful. So he's a professional consultant. He's a person
right.
with wisdom and knowledge and experience. And you know, the Torah recognizes that we need chavruta, that we have blinders, that when we're in the moment, it's hard to put ourselves beyond the boundaries and see, like Chaim said, as Lynn recounted before in her poetic expression and allusion of intertextuality. And now, Debbie, as you're saying, yeah, absolutely, Yitro plays that role. But we still could ask the question, right? That answers the question why Moshe couldn't think of it himself. But we could still ask why, you know, did Hashem not inform Moshe to set it up this way?
Perhaps Hashem wants to give us the message, Yesh Chachma Bagoyim.
Excellent. So that may be for two reasons. Right. So although Hashem is at the helm and religion and revelation are necessary, right? Justice and ethics, even when we receive their fine tuning from Hashem, you know, Hashofet kol aretz lo yasa mishpat, have to stand as a universal. And that's part of God's plan. So, you know, this says, right, that although Jews, Israelites are building or aspiring to build a good society, it's not only for Klal Yisrael alone, but it is to be Or LaGoyim. And what's interesting here, it's the Yitro himself contributes to that light and show there's a shared destiny. And of course, we know that part of the Noahide covenant, the only positive commandment is dinim, to establish a system of justice, which mm-hmm. doesn't mean just to impanel a court system. It means to have legislation and codes and an ethical society. But I'd like to suggest another answer. And we're going to come back to Or LaGoyim. I'm looking at the clock, and I do have two more things to share, and then maybe we'll have time for a couple of comments and questions at the very end. Right? Why couldn't Moshe think about it himself? The truth is, maybe he could have thought about it himself. But we just read about the governmental structure or hierarchy of authority in Israel. Who ate at the Kiddush with Yitro? Aaron, his brother, who's that of the priesthood, and the elders, the tribal hierarchy. What's that based on? Both of them, the priesthood and the tribal hierarchy. Consanguinity, right? It's based on your yichus, on your lineage, not on your merit. And what does Yitro do? He introduces a democratic system of justice. The qualification to be a judge is based on moral, spiritual, and social skills, on merit, not on family ties. What does it say in Pasuk Kapalapa Perk Yud Chet? Did I get that Pasuk right? Where is it? No, it's not. It's here. He says... Here it is, Pasuk Kapalef, excuse me. Va'atata chazemi kol ha'am, go sear out, right, to discern within the people, anshei chayil, men of valor, yirei Elokim, fearers of God, which is always an expression denoting ethics in the Bible. Anshei emet, men of truth, sonei batza, who hate graft. Them you are to make the judges. You know, sometimes people hire consultants, right, Le'enayim, to see what we ourselves can't see because we have blinders. Sometimes CEOs and heads of organizations know exactly what they need to do to change the organization, but the organization can't be changed within. The politics are just too deep and too tight. So what do? You spend money, you hire a consultant. The consultant comes in and says exactly what you already know, but you say, we have to follow the consultant. So what does Yitro do? Yitro says, yes, we know that your whole perception of hierarchy is based on lineage, but for this one role, it has to be based on merit. And you have to listen to me. Seek out. The people are anshei emet. And it's very beautiful. For those of you who will say tomorrow night the tefillah for your children and your children's children before Hadlakat Neirot, Zakeni Legadel Bunim Ubne Bunim, right? A lot of these allusions of what Yitro recommends to be Dayanim are precisely the same expressions that are used in the children that we pray we will merit to raise in our world. So maybe Moshe couldn't have introduced such a revolutionary reorganization of those in power to govern. Or maybe he could have, but he did. It was just too political. Yitro could. It could be. But there's one more thing, right, that I want to mention in closing. And this is especially important after the horrific event of last Shabbos outside of Dallas in the synagogue that was terrorized by a man with murderous intent Thank God the cool thinking and calming presence of the rabbi and the congregants who were in that had a positive outcome. Right before we got to Parshat Yitro, what Parsha did we have?
Amalek.
Parshat Amalek. Amalek preyed upon the vulnerable of Israel. They took advantage. They had murderous intent. And they have come to symbolize evil, true evil, right? There are many enemies Israel had throughout our history, and yet we're told to be kind to the stranger because we were strangers in Egypt. And even with the conquest described in Sefer Yehoshua of the Canaanites, right, that's for a temporary period of time, but there's no eternal command to, you know, fight with Amalek and eradicate their evil. There is a question of whether Amalekites could become B'nai Balei Tshuva in Masechet Megillah, which we just finished in Daf Yomi. It says, B'nai Banim Shel Haman Lamdu Torah B'nai Brak, right? That you could accept converts from Amalek. But we have this vision of Amalek, and it could be after experiencing the servitude and the stubbornness and the persecutions and sufferings of Egypt, and then being attacked by Amalek just as you came out of the Red Sea and you made strides for freedom, that the Israelites would think, you know what? It's us versus them. That's all there is in the world. Us and them. And then comes along Yitro and says, no, it's not us versus them. It's us and our allies who are for good and right and ethics and justice. And then there are people who are evil, who stand for the opposite of what Torah values are. And the person who says this most explicitly is on the last page. I brought a very long Ramban. You could read it in the sources. I brought in Ibn Ezra. There's questions. There are difficulties in the text that makes us suspect that Yitro's Parsha is out of place. It really doesn't belong right after the Amalek story. Maybe Yitro came after Har Sinai. First of all, it says they offered a korban and they had a kiddush, they ate of the sacrificial meal, but there was no active mizbeach until the Mishkan, till after Har Sinai. So how did it happen before? There are so many questions that people raise that says, you know, Ein mukdam b'muchar b'torah, u'muchar b'torah, the Torah is not presented in a chronological order. It's not a precise history. It's there for our edification. And so the question is, if you say the Torah is out of order, it's upon us then to justify and explain why then is it presented as it's presented. If it's not in chronological order, there must be some greater purpose in juxtaposing the model of Amalek and the model of Yitro. And the person who says this is Rabbi David Kimchi of 13th century Provence, a beautiful commentator on the Torah. What does he say on Sefer Shoftim? We read in Sefer Shoftim, Uvnei Keni Choten Moshe. Here's another example of where Yitro gets a different name. And the children of the Kenite, Moshe's father-in-law, Alu Mehar Hatmarim et Bnei Yehuda Midbar Yehuda Sher Benegev Arad Ve'elech Ve'eshevel Et Ha'am. They dwelled in the province of the tribe of Yehuda. Okay? In this commentary, this is what Radak says. Uparshat Vayishma Yitro, our parsha, Shalobim koman nichtava, it's not written in its proper chronological place. Lechaber is there to tie, to juxtapose, to connect. Devar Yitro, the matter of Yitro, in Devar Amalek, next to Amalek. Why? Ki Amalek haral Yisrael betzeitam mitzrayim v'hatzer lahem, because Amalek, the evil, was Oherat Israel, was evil to Israel when they left Egypt and distressed them, and therefore Shamar Lo Hakadosh Baruch Hu Adavar Tzov Kol Adorot. God remembered that for all generations. It was a war against Israel. It was a war against God. It was a war against all that is good in the world. Right? Milchemet Hashem Bamalek Midor Dor. The Yitro hatib the Israel, but Yitro was good to Israel, the samach betovatam, and was joyous for the good that happened to Israel. Beitiv lahem atzato, and he shared in their destiny. He gave them good advice to better themselves. B'shamar lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu atova atzof kol adorot. And God also wants us to remember this in equal measure to our remembering the evil of Amalek for all generations. This is a very important lesson for a people that wants to aspire to be Or LeGoyim, right? You don't want to be Or LeGoyim, a light to the nations, if the nations are all Amalek, if it's all us versus them. All you want to do is survive and get the best of them. But if you say, yes, there are bad people, there are enemies, there are Jew haters, there are anti-Semites, but there are also philo-Semites, there are decent human beings, there are people with whom we can share a common human destiny, God, says Radak, wants us to appreciate both of those models. Now, what's interesting is when we get to Sefer Shmuel, and this is such a pella, such a wonder, is the Kenites, the Midianites, move. At this point, they're nomads. They move from living with Yehudah, and who do they go to live with? Amalek. And Shaul, who's about to go to war against Amalek, has to say to them, we remember your kindness. We don't want to hurt you. Please leave the scene. Run away so we could fight with Amalek and not fight with you. Why Yitro ends up with Amalek in Sefer Shmuel, why they reside amongst the Amalekites is just a wonder that we'll have to say for another time. But what we've tried to do in our hour together is develop a personality for Yitro. He was a truth seeker. He developed over life. In many ways, he was like an Abraham figure. Perhaps he went to be a light into the nations by himself. He certainly was an Or Mehagoyim Li Israel, a light from the nations for Israel, and is organizing the judiciary. And per the Radak, which is so compelling, Hashem wants us to understand there are Amalekites in the world, and we have to fight against them and stand up and defend the Jewish people. And there are also Yitros in the world. There are allies and partners for with whom we have to build a good society for all. And that's a beautiful legacy of Yitro on the Parsha that we received the Torah, the Parsha where we're reminded that at our core, we have to establish systems of justice. And I thank you for studying Yitro, counselor and confidant with me this Erev Shabbat. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you very much, Reb Benji. Thank you. There are a couple of questions in the chat box. If you want to quickly take a look, I can read them to you if you have a couple minutes.
Yes. What I would say is, why don't we say the class is over and whoever needs to leave, please take your leave. No offense taken. And those who would like to stay, I'm happy to stay as long as you want to discuss your questions.
Rabbi, can I make a comment?
Please, Lynn.
Yitro affects a transformation in Moshe. In chapter 18, Vayiba Mimacharat Vayeshev Moshe, he's sitting. Then when it's over and after he advises Moses how he is to construct this system of justice, in verse 23, Imeta Davar Hazeh Tatzeh, Vitzivcha Elohim V'yacholta Amod, he allows Moses now to stand. And there's a magnificent passage in Leviticus 26 where God says he's going to recreate Eretz Yisrael as a kind of new Eden. And the summary pasuk is Va'alechetchem komimiyut, that God will allow them to stand again. And the word komimiyut becomes the theme for the establishment of the state of Israel.
Beautiful, beautiful, as always, Lynn. I didn't have time in the class to highlight the novel, Moses, Man of the Mountain, which is Zora Neale Hurston, the 1920s African-American anthropologist who wrote a fictionalized version, an imagining. It's midrashic of the Exodus story. And it represented also a Black liberation narrative for her in her time. And she has this beautiful interpretation where Yitro leaves so that Moshe could stand on his two feet, not that he would remain a crutch and stifle Moshe's development into the leader that he needed to become. And that's why Yitro leaves. And then he comes back later at another time. Sima, I see your hand up.
Yes, I actually was thinking that the text itself bears out your comment about the peaceful relationship between the potential peaceful relationship between B'nai Israel and another nation in the use of the word Lech L'Shalom in the beginning of the relationship with Moshe and Yitro, and then the Yishalu Ish L'Reyehu L'Shalom. It's a kind of a bookend of that peaceful. It gives you the sense that there's a peaceful relationship between Moshe and Yitro.
Beautiful. Oh, what a beautiful read. Suri, I see your hand up.
I just wanted to add, aside from the passage about Shaul giving the Kenim an opportunity to leave before he fights Amalek, we have Yael, Eshet Chever HaKeni, who kills Sisra.
Yeah,
so she helps us. She's our ally. The Kenim are our ally in the battle against Sisra.
Absolutely. And the truth is, right, kindness, you never know when kindness will pay for itself. So that's also part of the story, right? Moshe stood up to the shepherds and it had a ripple effect in the destiny of Israel that is immeasurable. including, you know, what you just mentioned, Suri. So, you know,
well,
there are times when kindness will not be recompensed, like with Amalek. And that's Shmuel's lesson, that sometimes when you're kind to the cruel, you'll end up being cruel to the kind, as the Midrash says. But in most other cases, kindness does pay off. But, you know, sometimes it doesn't, right? The rabbi last Shabbos was being kind to this man who came in for a cup of tea, and he ended up a hostage. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu was Shomer al Balei Chesed and protected them. So, okay. I'm looking in the chat. Why wasn't Rebecca at the well and she had a brother? Yes, it's not a perfectly analogous case between Moshe and the daughters of Yitro and Yaakov Avinu with Rachel and Leah, or with when Eliezer comes and sees Rivka. But, you know, wells are where you go to when you arrive at a new place, both for the practical purpose that you're thirsty and your transportation is thirsty, right? It's like a gas station. But also because that's where people would seemingly gather. But it could be interpreted as an allusion that, you know, Moshe, you know, might have had an interest in Sipora. Looking for a Chiddush. Excellent. Moshe tells Yitro he's returning to his brethren. This is the first time he hears that Moshe is a Jew and not a Mitzri. Yeah, that is an excellent, right? Moshe looked like an Egyptian. He talked like an Egyptian, but he wasn't an Egyptian. The truth is, Moshe didn't know what he was, right? When it says, one of my favorite interpretations, I don't remember if I read it or if I came up with it myself. And if I did come up with myself, I'm positive it must have been said a million and one times before me. But when Moshe looks this way and that way, right, you could say he looked this way. Is he an Egyptian and should side with the taskmaster? And he looked that way. Or is he an Israelite and should side with the Jews? Right. And he makes a pivotal decision. Right. Just like Yosef made the decision to reveal himself and stop being Safna Paneach and become Yosef Atzadik, who cares for his family. OK, but you're right. Yitro would have been interested, even more interested, as Chaim said before. Right. Curious about him. So Yitro met Moses before Tziporo and Moses was a child. That would seemingly be the intent of the Midrash, although I doubt Moshe remembered it. Okay, another thought. Moshe grew up in the palace of Paro. He undoubtedly saw the advisors and ministers of Egypt and perhaps consciously rejected that model for Israel. That's a very thoughtful idea, Andrew. Yeah, it could be that Yitro had to earn his competence. Could you please explain a little more about Zipporah circumcising their son? Why wasn't he circumcised already? Jessica, that is such a great question. But Rabbi Jay is taking notes and he's going to say, I have a 1,001 Bible scholars on my speed dial that I'm going to call to give a share on that. I would not do justice to it in a al regel achat. It is a passage that demands interpretation. It has a history in the Parshanim and in the Midrash. And it also has parallels in ancient Near Eastern literature that an expert in those materials should be speaking about it.
Rav Benji, if I may, just because it came up yesterday, Rabbi Kowalski gave a shiur yesterday on Torah Motion, and he slightly addressed that question. One of the points he made, which I thought was a fascinating point, was that he wanted to teach Moshe that there is no guarantee of success. God had just spent a week convincing him to go, and then 5 months later, he's going to kill him. He's going to abort the whole mission. That was a message to Moshe that if you blow it, I'm not guaranteeing you, you know, Shema Yigram HaChet by Yaakov Avinu. So the story is an interlude to warn us that this was not a guarantee that Moshe was going to have to do step by step. That's just one idea, but I agree. We'll have to call up one of our Bible scholars to give a longer shiur, but that's just, I figured out that point.
There's this new series that Koren put out, and I have the volume on Shmot. I don't know if it has anything on this particular passage, but like I said, I know there's a whole literature about the half being half eaten by a snake motif in ancient Near Eastern literature, and how this relates to what happens to Moshe. There's it's fascinating material.
Okay, I think that we will thank you and let you go. Thank you very much for a wonderful share, and we look forward to learning with you in the future, and we look forward to learning with everybody online. And next year is actually my weekly share tomorrow on the Seder. We'll hopefully finish La'olam Yehei Adam Yirei Shemayim V'Seitu Regaloi after a few weeks. That's tomorrow at 9 a.m. Sunday at 11:15, Rabbi Liebtag begins a new series on how to read a biblical book. And then continuing Monday, Lindsay Guhart's on the Islam for Jews, and Tuesday continue Alex Israel and Eliyahu, and then at nighttime in Halacha, all our series of Shirim, a new series starting up next Thursday at 10:30. Malka Simkowitz on actually the Jews of ancient Egypt, what ancient Egypt was like, 4-part series. That'll be at 10:30 and Shuli Mishkin, and they'll give her regular shear at 12 noon. I want to welcome people who are new. I think some of the Boston people. So thank you. Thank you, Reb Benji, for inviting them. A pleasure to have you. And then next Thursday night's Parsha Shear is Rabbi Natty Helfgott from Teaneck, New Jersey. So we look forward to learning with you. And thank you very much. And Reb Benji, a pleasure. And everybody should be well, and Shabbat Shalom. Thank you. Mila Tov, everybody.
Shabbat Shalom.
Good night.
Shakoa. Thank you.
Thank you.